Welcome to the Why is Cybersecurity So Hard panel, sponsored by the Unisys Center for Innovation in Government. Cyber threats have created unprecedented technical and social challenges that have never before been addressed. Today, experts will be discussing the issues that the public is facing because of cyber threats and what progress is being made in regards to cybersecurity. Here's your moderator, Francis Rose.
Thanks for joining us on the program today. Cybersecurity is difficult for federal agencies to manage. It's difficult for private sector companies to manage. And it's difficult sometimes even for individual users to manage. And three experts to join me today to talk about that very subject. Tony Valletta is the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for C3I. Mark Cohn is Chief Technology Officer of Federal Systems for Unisys. And Andre Eady with Unisys Information Security. Joining me in studio. On the phone with me today is Amit Yoran, who's chairman and CEO of the NetWitness Corporation. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Looking forward to this conversation. Tony, we'll start with you. It's a pretty straightforward question. Why has this been difficult for people to wrap their arms around?
Well, cybersecurity is so multifaceted that it affects so many elements of our nation, as well as our industry, both commercial, military, government. It ranges from all the way down to individual privacy and capabilities and all the way up to our critical infrastructure. It's something that has grown to immense proportions since back in the 90s when I was in the Department of Defense and we paid a lot of attention to it. I'm very happy to see both the Department of Defense and the rest of the federal government becoming very proactive instead of reactive to this situation. As you all know, we've been experiencing all different types of cybersecurity issues as well as penetrations and attacks, ranging from individual things to websites to even penetrations of our power grid. Mm-hmm. So I, for one, that have been working this for many years, I'm very concerned to make sure that things like our critical infrastructures of the United States do not get attacked and penetrated. So we take the proper education, the proper awareness, and the proper measures to take care of things like that. So the DOD and the DHS, to me, are banding together and starting to do the right things. Mm-hmm. Are we totally there yet? No. I think we're doing great things. We have a long way to go. And we're going to need a lot of help and a lot more work to be prepared for what I see coming in the future.
Mm-hmm. Amit, two of the things that Tony said I would like you to follow up on. One of the reasons that cybersecurity is so hard, is it possible that it's because people think of it strictly as database or network penetration? And he mentioned the power grid, and I think there are probably not many people in the general public that would think that penetration of a power grid is necessarily a cybersecurity problem.
It's not only a cybersecurity problem, but clearly we have numerous instances and examples where control systems, things like the power grid, the production, transmission, distribution of power, or other control systems and other business processes that people wouldn't think of as computer-related or computer-oriented are all managed or controlled by computer systems. And these systems, like any other computer system, can be penetrated, they can be compromised, and they can be controlled frequently by the outside. And so it becomes a significant point of vulnerability for our nation for all modern aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. Mark, talk about this evolution from the early days of cybersecurity. Take us back to maybe the early to mid-90s when a lot of people started connecting to the internet and it started to proliferate from beyond something that was just used by a small group of people to become a more general purpose and general interest, almost utility, to get where we are today with the dangers that are out there and the difficulties of trying to control those dangers.
Well, you know, when you speak of the internet, it's the largest system in the world. It's entirely loosely coupled. It was originally designed and built with protocols that assumed people were trusting each other, but across an unreliable network, but with network that was transparent or you could see the topology. Now we're at the exact opposite situation, of course, today. It's proliferated. We don't have the topology well understood. And we don't know if we can trust the parties that we're interacting with because they're generally anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look back to historically to the mid-90s, think about the movies that were going on around that time, something like War Games,
mm-hmm.
where cyber penetration allowed somebody to penetrate military command and control systems according to the fictional plot in the movie. Another one, I think it was Die Hard 3, but there was a movie where Bruce Willis saved the day, but the terrorists were going to fly a plane into the runway at Dulles Airport by taking control of the ILS.
Mm-hmm.
I was personally interested in that because we designed and built the systems that are used for remote monitoring control of the runway, nav aids and radars and other infrastructure in the FAA.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the sense a physical and a cyber attack to affect critical infrastructure. And here it is. It's on the movie screens and Hollywood's fictionalizing it. Yeah. But the reality is, I think that was the public perception that we had large-scale systems and they weren't well understood, but most people that were general consumers didn't find that accessible to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, we survey the public about the threats and concerns they have around the world. The number one and number two concern to consumers in every region of the world is bank card fraud, misuse of personal data, or identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And although, you know, the public education campaign says, watch out for dumpster diving, that's the way to protect your personal information, we all know that more cyber theft attacks result in loss of personal private data than dumpster diving.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people, consumers are now aware of this. There's a recognition that cyber hygiene and cyber activity is something we depend upon. By the same token, a lot has been done to improve security so that online commerce has people's confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of history, I think we've come full circle.
Yeah.
The internet is now viewed as almost an appliance like power.
Mm-hmm.
We take it for granted that it's there. And we also have questions about individual responsibility and enterprise responsibility for managing information security because it's kind of a real problem of economic externalities.
Mm-hmm.
People can mess up, but others are really affected more than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, when he talks about the idea of the internet as utility, that presents a lot of problems because I will take your former agency, the Pentagon. They're plugged into, say, the power grid, the electrical grid, but there are provisions in place. There's obviously provisions in place for the internet as well, for a cyber network as well. Does the fact that maybe the agencies don't have the control over the internet the way they have control over their, say, water or their electrical supply or other utility type applications, what challenges does that present for trying to wrap their arms around cybersecurity?
Well, I think as Mark was saying, the internet was invented to be freewheeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I call it the Wild Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're ever going to see the kind of controls that the internet will have, such as an intranet. Okay. We invented intranets exactly for that reason, mm-hmm. to have control. We have the Defense Information Systems Network, an intranet within the DoD with the right clearance levels to send data across. The intelligence has certain networks that they use. Other federal government agencies have the same. What worries me, back to Amit's point on the power control systems and the computer control systems and a lot of our critical infrastructures and other things, is that to me, I look at those things like your car, okay? You need to maintain those capabilities over the years. The United States has let a lot of our infrastructures, bridges, roads, tunnels, you know, et cetera, for lack of funds, for lack of desire, whatever, you know, kind of erode. Now we have campaigns with the stimulus to try to take care of that. I see the cybersecurity campaign starting because along with that were those control systems. I believe that a lot of those control systems and those computer control systems on a lot of our infrastructures haven't been changed, haven't been updated. They haven't spent the money to change the oil, i.e., like I was saying, for a car,
mm-hmm.
you know, analogy. And we need to do more of that. We need to do that periodically. We need to take the best technology that our great industry, such as Unisys and all the rest of the companies in this country can provide,
mm-hmm.
And upgrade our capabilities, put the best protection schemes on all of our critical infrastructures. And I think that's going to cost money. It's going to take time. But I think we have the wake up now from the attacks that we have seen and other things that I think we have more information sharing. The attack on the power grid actually brought together a lot of the power grid participants to actually start sharing information,
mm-hmm.
and work together to provide the countermeasures and the protection.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do that in all the other areas of critical infrastructures in this country: water protection, health, banking, as Mark said, a whole host of other areas.
Amit, Tony talked about the attacks on the power grid, bringing power providers together and getting them to finally start working together. Do you see the possibility of people in each of those individual fields getting together and talking about these issues and starting to make progress on them together without the type of attacks or some other terrible event that Tony talked about? Or are enough people aware of these challenges and difficulties that they're going to start to work on these without having to have one event propel them into that work?
I'm unfortunately a little bit pessimistic on the topic. I think there are pockets and there are groups of folks which are getting together and starting to make meaningful progress. But I don't think even the utilities, where one could certainly argue that there's a significant public interest at stake here. There's all the incentive in the world to take action. All of these things exist. And, they are getting together. They're starting to talk about it. We have different CIP regulations coming out now to make things, a little bit more stringent in terms of security. But these control systems have been developed and deployed over the course of decades. They might be 20, 30 years old, and they're designed in such a way and with such specificity that you can't simply apply a patch to a control system, because you'll violate the manufacturer's warranty. You might change the performance characteristic of a computer, which then could affect how the control system physically operates and how it manipulates machinery. And the timing on these things has to be exceptionally precise. So the ability, and these systems were designed in a world and at a time and in a mindset where they would be standalone. But what's occurred over the years is they've interconnected them to gain efficiency, to be able to operate them remotely, and we've gotten to a point where many or most of these systems, through some sequence of gateways and risk mitigation methods, are now connected to this loose internet. The perimeters that they relied on to defend them by being disconnected have disappeared. And I think that trend, which is occurring in business networks today, is occurring in each one of these individual industries as well. And that when you think about how porous, if you will, enterprise networks have become, and our ability to adequately protect those types of environments where we cannot adequately define the perimeter is increasingly challenged.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, Mark, I want to get your thoughts on what Amit has been talking about, and Andre Eady of Unisys, I want to bring you into this conversation too and talk about some solutions that you're seeing working inside agencies. You're listening to the Why Is Cybersecurity So Hard panel, sponsored by the Unisys Center for Innovation in Government on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Unisys Identity Solutions provides citizens, employees, and travelers with the means to identify themselves assuredly, conveniently, and effectively in both physical and IT environments. The goal in every identification and credentialing engagement is to provide the highest level of identity assurance in the most convenient and effective manner. Unisys brings domain and technology expertise, an acclaimed methodology, deep intellectual capital, and customer trust honed through mission-critical engagements worldwide. Unisys's end-to-end solutions incorporate all aspects of identification and credentialing, including identity verification, card and document issuance authentication, and access control. Unisys Identity and Access Management engagements integrate the process, centralizing user account provisioning and administration, yielding improved security, lowered cost, and increased productivity. Learn more about Unisys security offerings. Visit unisys.com.
Welcome back to the Why is Cybersecurity So Hard panel, sponsored by the Unisys Center for Innovation in Government on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pleased to be joined in studio by Mark Cohn, who is the Chief Technology Officer of Federal Systems for Unisys. Also, Tony Valletta, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for C3I, and Andre Eady of Unisys Information Security. And on the phone with us today, Amit Yuran, who is Chairman and CEO of NetWitness Corporation. Gentlemen, appreciate all of your time today. I mentioned before the break, Mark, that cybersecurity is hard, of course, but there are solutions out there. Talk about some of the strategies, not even necessarily the technologies, but just the mental approaches or the strategies that successful entities, enterprises, and individuals are using to combat cybersecurity challenges.
Okay, well, you know, we look at this from a number of perspectives, from the federal agency perspective and the private sector. It seems like it's a different problem, but it truly, in many ways, is not. Once we get outside the Homeland Defense mission, what we're really talking about is defending large-scale enterprises. And the CXO challenge, whether it's in the federal agency or the private enterprise, is really integrated risk management. And where we see a lot of activity is not just common access cards for identity management and then better identity proofing, but an integrated model for agency level and mission systems level resiliency. And some of what's helping there are some of the technology trends. Oddly enough, movement towards centralized computing like the cloud is giving people the ability, as they do it, to improve security in some cases, say through virtualization, recreating virtual machines mm-hmm. when they need to, so they refresh the configuration to a known state, but also to have better plans for business resiliency. So even though the resources are diminishing that are available to us and the playing field is shifting with these greater cyber threats, there are some trends that are allowing the IT professionals to help address the cyber risks. Now, fundamentally, it's really a business problem, not an IT problem. And one of the things that we tend to focus a lot, and when we try to build a roadmap to help a customer or client understand what their challenges are, is how to measure the financial consequences of cyber risk. Because at least in the private sector, that is the measure that we use of value in our society. There are some great resources on that. I would refer anyone who's interested, the contractors and the suppliers come to me all the time and say, how do you get business doing this? Mm-hmm. And there's a guide that ANSI published on the financial management of cyber risk, which is a fantastic document covering a lot on a framework for operations and technology, but how to make business sense. Mm-hmm. By the same token, one of the things that I personally think is a very important development is the national strategy for trusted identities in cyberspace, so that someday down the road, we hope to be able to understand what transactions coming to us are from trusted individuals and trusted devices. And if we think about something like non-repudiation on email, delaying denying phishing attacks as a vector, a key thing is digital signatures on email and the ability to use ESMON to encrypt email. Mm-hmm. There are companies, law firms, private enterprises that recognize the value of that. As our society moves forward, I think we can do a lot there to improve our secure information sharing.
Mm-hmm. Andre Eady of Unisys, talk about some of the solutions that federal agencies are seeking as they start to get a better idea on what it is they need to do to secure their networks and to be proactive, as Mark was talking about, instead of just being reactive to cyber challenges.
Certainly. When we talk to CIOs and chief information security officers and IT professionals around the Beltway in both the federal marketplace and the private sector space, you know, one of the things that they're constantly challenged with is the complexity and the pervasiveness of IT security. The thing that they're dealing with now is the networks are so much more complex. There are a variety of technologies, both new technologies and many legacy technologies that are integrated and working together, spread over vast geographic areas, and they're struggling with how do you bring together a platform that allows you to address those types of issues. What we tend to see on how we tend to work with them is understanding their information, what they're trying to protect, where that data lives, who's using it, who needs access to it, and providing an actual framework. As Mark talked about, there are frameworks out there. Help them identify the framework that works for that organization, and then identify the actual technologies, not only the technologies, but the processes that they need to have in place. And one of the aspects of IT security that's often overlooked is the end user piece. Mm-hmm. It's educating the end user. It's the awareness that the end user has about how they are interacting with these IT systems, the data that they have access to, and how they should interact in that environment. So we've noticed that there's a lot more emphasis on end-user education, a lot more emphasis on making sure that information is properly categorized within the organization, mm-hmm. and that it's limited to the appropriate folks who need access to it. So those are some of the questions that we tend to hear around the Beltway, and we work with those organizations to find solutions that meet those challenges.
Amit, as Andre talks about some of the challenges that agencies are starting to address, are you getting a sense that the mindset or the mentality that people are approaching cybersecurity, are using to approach cybersecurity is changing? Are we starting to see an evolution of how people want to solve some of these problems?
I think we're just starting to see some of those changes happen. The federal government's approach to cybersecurity over the past decade plus, and I'd say not too dissimilar from what we've seen in the private sector, has been very compliance-focused, very paperwork-focused. And if there's one thing that all of these headlines have shown us over the last decade, two decades, it's that you're not secure simply by being compliant with the regulations that for your industry. We need to, as organizations, we need to plan for the failure that we know is occurring. We know systems are being compromised. We know our adversaries are very sophisticated, and the attack surface for any enterprise is just so tremendous because of user error, because of their business processes, because of how we use and rely on technology. If your enterprise hasn't detected a compromise and hasn't responded to a significant compromise or breach in the last week, month, quarter, year, multiple years, then you're probably exceptionally gifted, incredibly lucky, or perhaps you're missing something. And I think that's the realization that we have to evolve to. We need to be able to accomplish our mission objective even when we have networks and infrastructure which are compromised in some form or fashion.
Tony, you're nodding your head in agreement with Amit as he's talking about this change. What is it that he's saying that you like the most?
I have not seen as much activity as in the last 2 years, mm-hmm. over the last 15 to 20 years. I'm very excited that we have a national effort, a national profile from the White House, even the Congress. There's 30 to 40 different legislation bills trying to figure out how to provide the right authority for certain things and work this issue that we never saw in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. The fact that we have agencies working together, the DHS, the DOD, et cetera, the creation of the Cyber Command, like I was saying. I know how this town works. I've been in here for 44 years, and money talks, budget talks. And so there's money against cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of the industry putting investments in. Many of the major systems integrators have cybersecurity test ranges. They have laboratories that they're trying to test their products to meet the demands. The DOD has a test laboratory test range where they're looking at the products to make sure that we can, do things with them and mm-hmm. and support things. But more importantly, I have never seen the education go to the levels that I have seen mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. We talked a couple of university and colleges 15, 20 years ago into starting information assurance programs. Now, you can go to any of the major universities in the Middle Atlantic, University of Maryland, George Mason, all of the great schools around us, UVA, and there are cybersecurity degrees mm-hmm. available. We are trying to meet that demand because right now, you've seen articles in the press, you want to make a lot of money, you want a great job out there, become a cybersecurity expert.
Yeah.
Not only in the industry, but in the federal government. Federal government right now is hiring people, taking them away from the industry that's providing the capability.
Yeah.
Because such a lack, as Amit was saying, of the educational experts in this area. So what I don't want to see that I've seen in many years before is complacency mm-hmm. set in. I don't want to see us start, we're down this road, we're putting money against it, we have everybody awakened, we have the Congress ready to make legislative changes or add legislation to provide for authorities and things that we need so we can get the bad guys, whether they're national or whatever. And so we want to keep that going. We want to keep those actions continuing. Mm-hmm. That's why I say we're not there yet. But I think we have all the necessary capabilities. We have the necessary leadership that's looking into this. I am also excited. In the DOD in the past, my years that I was there, we always had techies working information assurance or cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. Well, look at what's happened in the last 2 years. The commander of Cyber Command, General Alexander, mm-hmm. is a warfighter.
Yeah.
The guys in the services are warfighters. That tells you that the DOD is looking at cybersecurity as an element of a warfighting capability, mm-hmm. taking it very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Amit talked about the fact that people are finally moving from the idea of I'm going to do everything I can to prevent any attacks at all on my network, recognizing that's not a realistic expectation in the year 2010 and moving forward. And that kind of reflects back on what you were talking about earlier about risk management. Talk about what that change in approach, what that change in mentality means, both for your company and for the people that you work with.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, when we talk about the people and my company, I work in a private sector company, mm-hmm. and one of the things that we're very much aware of is that there are legal and liability issues that ultimately need to be addressed for the economics of this to work properly. And I don't mean to be negative about it. I think our national leadership is focusing on this, but it's something that as a company, we can't address on our own. And I don't want to belabor the point, but it's a very important foundational thing. As we see the national security community confronting advanced persistent threats and cyber warfare, cyber espionage, you know, we're very grateful for the efforts that Tony and his what he personifies for us and Amit out of Homeland Security and his work at NCSD. These are things that allow people in the private sector to think that we're being protected. But now we need to focus on our own turf, mm-hmm. make sure that we're doing good cyber hygiene in our own environment. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy challenge because of the what it costs and that there isn't really a technology silver bullet. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act. We do a lot of catching up with security models. We do a lot with trying to educate individual consumers, where we're dealing with financial services or government websites, to practice good cyber hygiene. And one of the things that we're trying to do is also to promote a public consciousness. That we think that there may very well be a need for something like inter-network deep packet inspection, mm-hmm. and the ability for the national leadership to decide whether to partition some portions. There may be a need for quarantining botnet-infected endpoints. And to some extent, I think the private sector needs to step forward and help the government build the understanding of what it will take to do this. And it's a private sector, public sector collaboration that will be necessary.
I want to thank the Unisys Center for Innovation in Government for making this conversation possible today. Tony Valletta, thank you for being here today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Mark, as always, great to see you. Andre Eady, terrific to have you in on the conversation. And Amit Yoran, as Chairman and CEO of NetWitness, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to the Why is Cybersecurity So Hard panel, sponsored by the Unisys Center for Innovation in Government on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.